Blog Talk Radio.
Well, folks, another edition of Done Right. I'm Egberto Willis, your host. Thank you very much for being with me. It was, as I told you guys last week, a pretty tough time here in Texas, but as we do here in Texas, we survive. We survived a whole lot. We survived Perry for how many years? We survived. If I'm a bit off kilter today, my friends, it's because I'm working on very, very little sleep. As it turns out, I made, two trips to Austin this week. And, you know, Austin is about 185 miles away from Houston, and we carpooled each time to get out there and join our peaceful opposition to a draconian bill whose intent it still has to go to court, but whose intent was to take yet more rights away from our Texas women. And in Texas, we're gentlemen. Well, all over the country, we're gentlemen, but we don't want anybody taking away our women's rights, especially under the pretext under which it was done here in Texas. So to start, before I go into the blog that I really want to read, I want to go ahead and start with the preamble to my show. I didn't mail it out again. I didn't send out a mass mailer. This is the second week, I guess. I just use social media to make sure you guys know what's going on, but here it is. I drove to Austin yesterday morning at 5 a.m. to the Texas Capitol to witness the mass people movement objecting to the bill that all knew would ultimately pass. We got back from Austin at 3 a.m., tired but impressed with what will ultimately occur in Texas going forward. People from all corners of this state were present. And I tell you, folks, I spoke to folks from, like I said, all the different corners of Texas, and they were there. By now, everyone in America is well aware that the war on women's rights, the war on health care, the war on education, and the war on labor have its epicenter in Texas. After all, Texas has a robust economy that Governor Rick Perry advertises as he tries to entice other companies in other states to move their companies to Texas. Ironically, Texas is business friendly, mostly on the backs of its working middle class. It is a union-unfriendly state, which means wages for the working middle class are low. 25% of its citizens have no health insurance. Business credits and tax breaks are plentiful, even as education budgets are pilfered. The last straw was the prostituting of women's rights. Texas new law makes the use of chemical pregnancy termination, that is the RU486 pill, less practical. And later on in the show, we may go into detail as argued on the floor of the Senate, what makes it impractical. It creates an unfunded mandate to make abortion clinics surgical centers, meaning all but five in this state qualify. The bill provides no sex education, no family planning. This at the same time, over the last session, for all practical purposes, Perry defunded Planned Parenthood. In effect, it ensures there will be more unplanned and unwanted pregnancies. Out of this comes a business opportunity. And you know, that's what it's all about here in Texas. It's about a business opportunity. So what am I talking about? Where Planned Parenthood once provided robust family planning and inexpensive pregnancy terminations, a difficult choice for the vast majority of women that make that choice. I'm no woman, but I have spoken to many. I am married to one. I have a daughter. I have two sisters. I have nieces. I have aunts, grandmothers. I have all of that. So while I cannot speak as a woman, I can tell you what they tell me. I can tell you what they tell me. It's never easy being a woman. Out of this comes a business opportunity for Perry and his cohorts. Where Planned Parenthood once provided robust family planning and inexpensive pregnancy terminations, a difficult choice for women, the new Texas will do it all for a profit. I forgot to add a link to that statement. I should have. It was a Daily Coast article that showed Rick Perry's sister having interests in businesses that will profit. Because, folks, abortions are not going to be going down. There won't be less abortions. In fact, based on our policies and our levels of education, there is likely, and I'm coming to you next 954, it is likely that we will have more abortions as people have less options for Planned Parenthood, or for Planned Parenting, for planned family planning. Texas women and women around the country get it. Passage of Texas HB2/SB1, meaning House Bill 2, which is the same as Senate Bill 1, was the last straw. The destruction on all the progress made over decades for the American working middle class will no longer be tolerated. The Texas GOP has revived the Texas progressive movement. This movement will spread throughout the red states as rogue Republicans continue the Talibanization of the party. All right, folks. Let me take the caller before I go to the other blog. 954, who do I have the honor of speaking with?
Hey, it's Neil. How you doing?
Hey, Neil. Talk to me. What's going on?
Well, you know, I want to talk about the farm bill too. But
let's do the Texas thing. If you have an opinion,
okay.
And then
absolutely. There's a major connection.
And then we'll go to the farm bill too, because remember, this is your show, brother. So we'll go to that as well. So come on in. Let me hear it.
Basically, Perry's sister is involved in all the ambulatory. She's going to make a fortune from this bill. That's the real major reason why. It's not about being pro-life. It's about his sister and family can make a lot of money.
Right.
And that's what it's really about. And it's the same. It's just disgraceful. And it's like they don't care. Again, we all know that once the child is born, they don't care if it lives or dies, has food, water, shelter, lunch, if the child doesn't have health care, they'll let the child die. So, again, I always question their lack of Christianity. They can call themselves Christians all they want. I can call myself a farmer. I've never farmed a day in my life. But you have to be able to back it up with Christian acts. And when everything you do is the opposite of Jesus, I'm not going to take you seriously. And they're obsessed with abortion. I mean, with all these forced vaginal probes, are they going to find jobs in there? Are they going to find infrastructure? Are they going to find, you know, they're just really being, I hate to use the word, but from my perspective, they're being evil. They really.
I'm sorry. Continue. I'm sorry.
No, I don't see the logic in this unless they don't want children to grow up to go to college. They don't want thinkers. So they want children to be born into misery where the parents can't have jobs, that the children are poor, and then they grow up and they're hopeless and they can't afford to go to college. So they take the lowest common denominator job to barely survive and be happy with it. And that's the dystopia that they're trying to create.
I tell you something that happened to me yesterday. I went into that Capitol expecting to – hate is a hard word. But when somebody hurts your family, the people, you know, your women, when you know that there is a male contingent that is backed by a constituency that – it's going to harm your women. You know that.
Yes.
You walk into that Capitol wanting to hate the opposition. And I know hate is a heavy word, but I try to keep love all the time in my speech, irrespective. That's the modal that I try to maintain. When in that Capitol, that Capitol was jammed. I mean, you could hardly move around without bumping into people. And everybody knew where everybody stood. All of us that were pro-choice wore orange. All those that were anti-choice wore blue. And you know me, I engage everybody. But this was kind of raw to me because the way I saw it is once these clinics closed, it was going to have a material effect on poor women all along around this country, on middle-class women all around this country. And there is, I mean, that is, as you mentioned before, that is evil, because especially given that you know it's being done for financial gain for others. But then I started engaging, and I have some interviews that I did with a lot of folks, you know, in the blue shirts. And the reason I engaged them is I really wanted to get their mentality, how they thought, what they were thinking. Sadly, I couldn't hate these people. I could not like these people. And ironically, a lot of them even became attached to this orange shirt. And what it was is that we went beyond what they were talking about. I mean, it's amazing. There was one particular woman, and I hope I can cut this video in the right way, that said, I looked at her and I said, I told her straight up, I actually like you. The way you're talking, I like a lot of what you're saying. I just disagree with what you want to do and how you want to accomplish it. There were a couple that came over and just wanted to, you know, I mean, there's this woman that wanted to try for me to somehow explain to her why it is that I personally didn't, and this is my personal opinion, why is it that personally I didn't feel that a fetus was a human being? There are these others who talk about wanting, you know, these children themselves. So, you know, I went in there wanting to really, by the way, I'm not making, first of all, I want to come out and be clear. They're absolutely wrong in what they're doing. They're absolutely misguided in their approach. And notice I'm not saying I think they are. I'm saying this as an absolute statement. They're wrong because They are making themselves God. The problem is this. They are all that are there indoctrinated. And that indoctrinated is being, that indoctrination is being abused by those who would use that to make a profit. So while many of us will want to, you know, look at those indoctrinated people as people to be hated because they are knowingly evil, my statement to you, my friend, after talking to a whole bunch of them, now granted, there are a lot of them that are the AKA type Karen folk. I know that from seeing them and from talking to a few of them. But most of those folks that I spoke to out there, they were, you know, I took some pictures of them too, the ones that you see there in the middle of the thing while the chanting is going on by pro-choice, and they're there praying. These are people that were given a certain view of the Bible, both from the homosexual point of view to the abortion point of view. They were indoctrinated into a way of thinking that somehow, for those of us who really want real change, have to find a way to change or to get to them, because all we can feel for these people right now is pity, but not hate or thinking that that they are intrinsically evil. Their acts are going to be evil because they are going to cause more deaths than what they save.
I don't think they're evil. I think the politicians are evil because their intent is not pro-life. I mean, the same people, the politicians that call themselves pro-life, are against birth control. They don't, the way you reduce abortion is science.
Right.
And the Republican Party has no allergy to science. It doesn't matter if it's global warming. It doesn't matter if it's birth control. The real battle, if you really get down to it, is sex. They have a major problem with sex and consequences. And if a woman wants to enjoy sex, there must be consequences.
Right. You know, and Neil, you're right about that. But then again, that falls into the same thing I think that I was saying before, and that is that they are indoctrinated into these beliefs. And, you know, I could look at some of post super liberal in thinking, I can look at some of the beliefs that I held there that now I just had to blow it out the window. I think I've told many of you on this show before that as a Caribbean Latino man from Panama, homosexuality, gay stuff, men being gay is not a cool thing, or wasn't a cool thing where we're from, and I brought all those prejudices with me. I've learned to squeeze that out of my system. I mean, it was forced by an intellect given to me by somebody who could talk to me, who I trusted. And in being able to listen to that person, I saw the wrong of how I was. And that is what somehow we have to get to those people who then will force those politicians otherwise. And I think that is our job as progressives. You know, we know, as I mentioned in several articles before, that nothing good in this country happened that wasn't pushed by progressive values, by liberal values. Another absolute statement. And anybody, any conservative on that's listening, you're my friends as well, call me and tell me how that statement isn't true. Neil, stay with me, but I have 908 and I'm keeping your mic open that you can jump in if you need to. 908, who do I have the honor of speaking with?
Hey, Egberto, John from Jersey.
John from Jersey, talk to me.
Well, this whole thing with Trayvon Martin's coming down to a close, but let's not forget about 14 months ago, there was a woman named Marissa Alexander who just alone, all she did was try to defend herself with a gun, took it out, fired it, didn't kill her husband because he was abusive. You know, I don't know, I guess they didn't believe that he was abusive. She tried to get court orders against him prior and all that. That wasn't granted to her. She tried to defend herself with a gun, and on the stand your ground laws, she was she wouldn't take a plea for 3 years. So mm-hmm. then whatever, she went and got convicted for 20 years, and they are not going to lower it.
Let me first of all, we can talk about Trayvon after the Texas thing, but here's the deal. I just want to bring that up since you mentioned that. I think it's important that I say one thing. She didn't even kill the guy. I think she shot the gun. She didn't even hit him.
You don't know this story.
Right.
You know this story?
Yes.
You know the story about Marissa Alexander, right?
That's the one who shot but never killed the person or hit the person. Is that correct?
Her husband.
Right.
I sent the story to you on Facebook. It was a CBS news or a thing. I sent it to you on Facebook. You can take a look at it too. Right.
Yeah.
Now.
When did you send it anyway? Because this week
just
was
a
bad week.
Just a little
week.
Bit ago.
Yeah. Okay. This was a bad week. I was all over the place. But what do you think about what's going on in Texas? Have you followed it at all?
Well, a little bit. Yeah. In Texas, it's unbelievable. I mean, but hey, the state will go blue. It will go purple. Will go blue. I think they've outraged a lot of people, and okay, power to them for now. And things will reverse soon enough. Like basically, those who are wealthy can basically go to these five centers. They'll have enough money to go to these five centers or out of state. But those who are not wealthy will have big issues with this. And that's a very racial thing, and also itself.
Absolutely. There's a whole lot that goes unsaid with this bill, but as Janine always say, and this is where this is a segue to you, Janine. As Janine always says, follow the money. See, I picked that up from your last show on Thursday, Janine.
Go ahead.
He's trying to make money off of it. Somehow that in order to. Well, I guess you know a bit more about it more than I do, but I understand that he, the governor, and others of his cronies are going to make money off of this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So let's bring Janine here. Janine, you got the social media view of our fiasco in Texas last night. For me, it was a beautiful experience because it was like populism coming back, and that's why I titled today's show GOP Reviving Progressive Movement. So let me have it.
Oh, well, I wouldn't call it a fiasco at all, Egberto. I would call it beautiful, wonderful.
Thank you.
Amazing.
We concur.
I watched the live stream until it was after midnight, your time, Texas time, and the police actually had to break up the party. But I was totally... Go ahead.
No, that's. I think somebody had a speakerphone on. Continue, Janine.
Oh, okay, great.
Hey, folks, I'm going to mute you until I... Go ahead, Janine, I'm sorry.
Oh, no worries. So it was very powerful, and I was posting and sharing your photos from Instagram and sharing the live stream with people, and at one point there was like 300,000, over 300,000 views. So... while the media is not covering this all that well, certainly social media is, and of course that's our job if we're a part of Coffee Party D, the media project.
Mm-hmm.
But, I have what's really touching to me is that this is the kind of effort that was needed to sort of point to the fact that Texas, who is like the queen of gerrymandering, and the home of dark money, right? This is what happens when that poison pill, so to speak, of gerrymandering and dark money tries to make laws behind the scenes. And the people in Texas wouldn't let it be behind the scenes. Now, was it going to pass? Absolutely, because there was this gerrymandering majority. But now the world has an opportunity to know, because in truth, what you sort of alluded to earlier, John, is that, and Neil too, is that this law is really a business strategy in Sunday school clothes. We're trying to throw it out there as women's safety, but But as I said on my show Thursday, having a normal termination in an operating room is like taking your food stamps to the grocery store in a Maserati. It is not essential. And then, but the other thing is that, as was pointed out, there's all kinds of money to be made here. Even though this law will go to court, even though this law will be probably turned around, in the meantime, all those clinics, all those rural clinics will be shut down. And so who will be left to provide service when it's legal again? Just the surgical centers. It is true that Malia Perry, sister of the governor, is a lobbyist for the surgical center association. I don't know the technical name, but that's what they are. It's and it's also true that State Representative Jody, how do you say her name, Lorenberg?
Lorenberg,
anyway,
yeah. But you know what, Janine, whenever you use her, you have to use her her other name, Rape Kit Clean You Out Woman.
Oh, Rachel.
You didn't know about that, did
one?
You?
Yeah, she's
oh, yeah, yeah. No. I just you made my brain change channels because I said, really? The Texas State Chair for ALEC thinks rape kits are to get rid of babies? This is so crazy. So, I mean, how incestuous is this? You know, dark money cronyism, gerrymandering, da. Dark money cronyism, gerrymandering, da. And so I was so proud of the people of Texas. Sure, there were a lot of women, but there were a lot of men. And on that stream, there were a lot of men. And there's a lot of men in this country. Feminism is not just a women's issue. Feminism is saying we are human beings. We deserve civil liberties. We deserve civil rights. We deserve access to medical care. And even the AMA came out and said, hey, you guys are messing with the doctor-patient relationship here. You know, so...
You know.
It's not going to stand up in court, but the business strategy part is just that all of this competition will be gone. So who's going to be left? Oh, my God, they're going to have to build new surgical centers in rural Texas, and they're going to have to be subsidized by taxpayer money because there won't be client volume needed to make profit. So this is not the end of abortion in Texas. This is the corporatization of abortion in Texas. And I think the women in North Carolina know this, and the women in Wisconsin know this, and the women in Ohio know this. You just keep going with the list.
But
so,
you know, also, Jenny,
it's also that
privatization thing. You know, it's Planned Parenthood is a nonprofit. They don't want that. Planned Parenthood is just too big. Think about if we had a corporation that's doing exactly what Planned Parenthood is doing, just at a higher cost. It means more profits. And, you know, I think one of the flaws that we have is that I don't think we are hard-hitting enough to let people know what's going on at times. In other words, I think we hold back because sometimes it's, can we really be sure of that? Well, you know, it's time for us to stop saying, can we really be sure of that? But is that a likely outcome? Because these guys have been passing laws on, is that a likely outcome? Just that, is that a likely outcome has been a sham. It has been a complete sham. So, I mean, we really have to get real on this issue. And we also really need to get real as far as how we address these issues, you know. We really need to. Janine?
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, again, I can't stress enough. This is a business strategy dressed up in Sunday school clothes. This is not about women's health. This is not about anything but profit. And so, but they rally their smokescreen with these quote-unquote religious versus
and moral
atheist,
issues.
Progressive versus conservatives, blah, blah, blah. But I'll tell you what, the Bible in my house does not say a fetus is a human being. It just doesn't. And you can do the search yourself. But until the breath of life is in that potential person, is it a person? And you can search the Old Testament, you can search the New Testament. You are not going to find anything that says, you know, when two cells join, there is life. That's a modern invention. It's a, it doesn't even matter. But so here we are arguing in theory religion when what's at stake are our civil liberties, our civil rights. Do women have access to medical care or don't they?
Egberto.
You know? Go ahead.
Yeah, you're absolutely right,
Janine. I got a funny but a good one. And sorry, Janine, I got a really funny but a good one. You know, the righteous, you know.
Hold on, John. Let Janine finish her thought, and I promise you're next.
It's good. I'm fine. I'm from where I am, and I'm very interested in feedback.
Okay, go ahead,
John. I got
John.
A really good one. You know, the righteous right wing, like Perry and them, okay? He believes that, you know, you should have no such thing as contraception or abortion. But do you know he had a vasectomy?
Interesting, eh? Interesting.
Did you know that?
No,
he had
it
right after his lobotomy.
Neil.
So, what a farsity.
Well, or you could say, like you say in my world, you know, even a blind chicken gets corn sometimes. So it's like, a stop clock is right twice a day. You know, he's obviously not all wrong. That was a good thing for him to do.
No kidding. You know what? I started the show and forgot to tell folks the number. Folks, 646-929, if you happen to pass by on the show, 646-929-2495. Again, that number is 646-929-2495. Please feel free to give me a call. I don't care what stripe you are, red, blue, conservative, liberal, Democrat, Republican, libertarian, anything. I want to hear your point of view, and I want you to call in and let's hear it. We're nice on this show. And 404, I'm coming up to you. 404, who do I have the honor of speaking with?
Bobby Rodrigo. Good afternoon, everybody. In crisis.
Bobby Rodrigo. Talk to me, my brother.
I don't know what the hell to do. I'm telling you, they're wearing me out. North Carolina, Texas. The list just keeps getting longer and longer, people. I am surprised that, well, the Texas, what's going on in Texas and North Carolina, again, I am surprised and not surprised how much we are not hearing about it. If it wasn't for social media, and social media is compounding it, of course, Janine, right, and you and Egberto right at the front lines of it, obviously. But it is amazing how little it is known outside of that realm what's really going on, what's really being talked about. But, of course, we do know that the jury is out in the Zimmerman trial, don't we? We do know that. But we don't know that Moral Monday is now ridiculously large from the standpoint of the country. We do not know that what's going on in Texas and the tampon outlawing
Bobby, you can't throw that out there without explaining it to the audience, because I think you just threw one right over their head.
Well, actually, I haven't actually read the entire aspect of it. You guys might know a little bit more about it than I do. I just know that apparently, first of all, I do know that there was a rumor that was put out there that there was urine and feces at the rallies. Now, we all know that was whatever. I mean, that's just opposition fodder coming out.
Right.
So, apparently they outlawed tampons in the Capitol because of the possibilities of them being part of the rally. As what was interesting was about the post that I read, because I just browsed through it, and I did find out that they were doing this. The guns are legal, but the tampons are not. So, of course, social media jumped right on that.
I wanted you to throw that out first, because I was at ground zero when it occurred. And it's funny because I also have a picture of the bag with tampons where women were throwing their tampons just before going into the Senate. I actually went when the guard was coming to move one full a bag that was filled at the bottom. I told him, "Hey, hold up, let me take a picture of that." And I took a picture of the tampons in the bag. But here's a funny story how I found out about it. I was in our representative Jessica Farrar's office, and one of the ladies that that we drove up together, she gave me a call, and she said, Egberto, I'm on the third floor. You know, she was right, getting ready to make the turn into the Senate, because these lines were extremely long, and they were holding space for me as I would run back to the office to do some vlogging. So she called me and said, come now and take my backpack, and a whole lot of people gave her tampons and Kleenex and all that kind of stuff to stuff in her backpack so that I could take back to the office, because they were confiscating all those things that could be thrown, but especially the tampons, because they were scared that this anti-woman bill would have the advertising out of all of this would be women threw tampons on anti-woman senators or something.
Sure.
You know, they were scared of that headline. But instead, the headline became worse.
there was an interesting picture. Social media jumped all over it, of course. And they created an AK-47 out of tampons and put it out there and said that they need
right.
to make it out of that so they could actually get it through the inside. They have a sign up that talked about how the state patrol was. They had a tampon checkpoint 1 mile on the interstate. You know, it needs to be addressed like that for the seriousness and the ludicrousness of the behavior. You know, Jeanine mentioned that men were involved, and of course we should be, and she's right, obviously, that it's another aspect of the civil rights issue. You know, women are half our society. I mean, give me a break. You know, I mean, first of all, what are we doing? Why are men? I don't know. I posted something this morning, if anybody saw it, just to give an example of the war on women again. I mean, the list is endless.
Hey, for my listeners, I want you guys to be, hold on, Bobby, hold on. I got to say this, because you guys always come out with all this good stuff, right? So I want to ask all listeners here, whenever you guys have all this good stuff, tag my name in there so that I can, because I put that stuff aside so that I can look into. You know, crowdsourcing is the best way to get damn good information. I just wanted to put that
Absolutely.
In. Continue, Bobby.
So I was tracking a case since last December, actually longer than that. It actually started before the election last year, and I seen it on a post. It was probably by now. But anyway, in Iowa, there was a sexual harassment case. And the case was about a woman who was fired because she was good-looking. And I'm serious when I say this, people. This was the issue of the case. She was too attractive, so her looks were affecting her boss's marriage, possibly.
Right, I heard that story.
Oh, my God. It was crazy. Just this last couple of days, I saw it this morning, so I posted it again. The Supreme Court of Iowa ruled that this was okay. So in December. So they were asked to reconsider it. And they did. And while acknowledging that essentially the aspect of a woman being fired because of her looks is obviously sexual harassment, they still upheld their decision and allowed the case to be won by the defendant because she was affecting the marriage. And I'm like, oh, my God. They actually disagree with themselves in the decision, but they do it, and here's a group of men.
Did you hear parts of the actual story that where, yes, she was sort of hinting to him that she liked him? And I guess what they really found out is that the wife was more or less afraid. But the thing is, he hired her already. You know, she
right.
should have had the right to sue.
Yeah.
He could have said no to hiring her originally. That would have been
fine.
He could have
said no to hiring her. Absolutely. And, you know, if you think about what this court is saying and the precedent that it is setting, oh, my God. I mean, you don't even have to think about it just in the standpoint of looks. You know, you can, because just like all legal rulings, it creates analogous situations where they go, well, the court said this and this situation is analogous to that. It is a really ludicrous analysis by the court. And yet this is one of our problems going on here is that I say constantly that one of the beauties of our base, our basis of our law is that we have the balance of the executive and the legislature and the courts, the judicial.
But what's happening to us lately is that the three of them are working in concert, and we're getting blasted from all of them, and they're not doing the checks and balance. And that's really bad because, you know, and the Patriot Act is a great example of this, and what's happening to women is a great example of this. There's no way that this law, as Jeanine pointed out, is legal in Texas. It should not hold muster at all, and it absolutely is based upon money, like so many things are, and we're all on board with that. But, you know,
but Jeanine said the magical thing, however.
We've got to help the women. This is getting absurd. From the man's standpoint, we really need to check our agenda at the door because they're not getting it. They really are not.
Well,
you know what?
Go ahead, John.
Yeah, the one thing I think Robert, he's definitely right on, and he hits on it, that you know, okay, yeah, you know, there's racial and things like that, Trayvon Martin, all these other stuff, these kind of cases. But you know what? It boils down to money and, like, white men who still have money and or banks, and they still have money, and they get to decide how the courts are going to influence things.
Yeah,
I
want to
ask you something, John. John.
Yeah.
I want to ask you something. You're a white man?
I'm white, yeah.
Okay. Here's the reason I asked that, because you just said something interesting. And 412, I come to you next. There's a lately or in the last several months, I've heard a whole lot of white guys say that they feel that right now they're taking the brunt of things happening. So to you and Bobby and Neil, do you think that is a valid argument right now?
No, it's
what
ridiculous.
About you, Neil?
I missed what you said. I'm sorry.
Okay, John brought up the thing, and he said it's about white men with money and a few other things that he said, and it kind of hit me because there's, you know, in a whole lot of different arenas recently, we've been hearing about the white guy being under attack. Is that something from the narrative in all these different venues? Something that you feel, Neil? Something that you feel, Bobby?
No. Basically, the Republican Party, basically, whenever they do something wrong, like they'll come up with the Patriot Act when something's unpatriotic. If something is hurting other races, then they turn themselves into victims to avoid responsibility. It's a manipulative ploy. Basically, it's like the war on Christmas when Bill O'Reilly has holiday lights on his Facebook account. He gets caught, pulls it down, but it's just basically victimizing yourself when there's no victimization to avoid all forms of accountability for your behavior.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Neil.
Well,
okay,
it's just a ploy.
Sure, because I think, you know, in a lot of the way we say things, I think it's important that we make sure that everybody realizes that it's not you're not trying to do a group analysis. That can become dangerous. So I just wanted to make sure after John said that. Okay, 412, 412. Who do I have the honor of speaking with?
Hello, Egbert. This is Greg in Pittsburgh.
Hey, Greg. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Talk to me. You know, add to the discussion, and I know you have a lot to add. You probably followed what happened in our town or our state capital last night.
Sure. Absolutely. And I guess my perspective on this, it might be characterized as maybe even just a little bit hopeful. And the reason I say that is that what strikes me as in terms of what's going on in Texas and North Carolina and other places really reminds me of the Bull Connor escapades of the 60s that finally were so over the top that brought the rest of America's attention to the inequities of Jim Crow laws and the racism in the South. That maybe this is the same kind of thing that's playing out now. And as a result of the absolutely extremist and unbelievable laws that are getting passed, and the positions that the Republicans are taking, is that maybe finally the rest of the country, outside of people like us that are paying attention, will finally pay attention, and And this seems to me to be the kind of the death throes of a dying party of old, rich white people.
You know, Greg, I think you hit it on the money. I was sitting down in the representative's office yesterday, and this young lady, you know, she's probably, 23, 25 or so. She was working hard. I went to the Capitol twice this week. I went to the Capitol the week before and a couple of weeks before that. I mean, so we've been at this stuff for a long time with this particular, it was HB5 once, then it came back down to HB2 for the second session and all that good stuff. And this lady and a lot of young women, young men, been out there working their hearts out. And I am sitting down in the front of the office blogging my stuff, and she comes in and she's like, "Hi, Egberto." And then I'm like, "Oh, you must be tired," because, you know, she was working hard. And she's like, "No, I just, you know, it's just, I feel so badly now, because with all that we've done, we know that now the bill is still going to go through." And I looked at her and I said, "It's 2013. And then I looked at her and I said, "I'll be honest with you. In a lot of ways, I want America to see on full display, these guys have the gall, with the amount of opposition that they have to this bill, both locally and nationally, they still had the gall to pass it. We need Texans to see that. We need Americans to see that. And in seeing that, if Americans don't react, if Texans don't react, then Texans are responsible for the government they elect, gerrymandering or not. Because this particular policy does not only affect the gerrymandered, it affects everyone.
I'd be willing to bet that if you took a poll, 90% maybe of Americans wouldn't have the first clue as to what you're talking about when it comes to gerrymandering. But now what the legislators in North Carolina and Texas are doing, despite the lack of appropriate coverage from the mainstream media, is coming to the attention of Americans everywhere, thanks to social media. And now they have, I think, in a lot of ways, they've stuck the Harry Caray knife into themselves for the last time. And when you try to take people's voting rights away, when you try to take their human rights away, when you try to take their civil rights away, at least historically, that has not worked out well on the long run. On the short run, it's been hard. It's been painful. There were lots of people that were killed in the 60s because of what they wanted to do to change this country. The Republicans have blown off their own toes at this point, and they're just making it matters worse by, as you said, having the unmitigated gall to usurp what has been proven to actually be fantastically good working models up to this point. The idea of abortion rights is a settled case. It has been for a long time. How can it be that the people in America today want to take away a woman's right to choose? I don't understand how we're having this discussion this many decades on.
Well, you know, there's another thing, Greg, and that is, short-term gain. And the short-term gain, as Janine mentioned earlier, there's a possibility that before all of this is resolved, because of what do they call it? Uncertainty. It's a possibility that some of these clinics in rural areas will close. And in the interim, and after it's been proved unconstitutional and all that other stuff, somebody has to go back and open them back up or rebuild them or do whatever it is they're going to do. And the likely, given what we've done to government these days, the likelihood is the intent would be for private companies to do so. It is for that reason, however, and I'm coming back to you, Jersey. I had to turn you off because I think you had some feedback before. What is interesting is that we have to do more than just change. You know, a lot of us look at how dysfunctional Congress is. We have to wipe everything out, because the dysfunction is deep, like a deep, not cancer, but a deep infection that is just ready to spread all over the place. And, John, it seems like you wanted to say something again, and your mic is hot again.
Yeah, two things I'm going to say. I'm going to go on this thing on Texas and then one quick thing on Trayvon Martin thing. You got these five key states, right, for the presidential race for 2016. We don't know where 2014 is going to go, but 2016, especially for the presidential race. So we got Virginia, we got North Carolina, we got Ohio, we've got Texas, and now and if not, let's say Florida, of course, because that's always key. You know, considering
I'm surprised
some
that
of the
you put Florida and Ohio in there. I think those two states are perennial battlegrounds all the time.
Right. Well, they are. But I'm just saying. Some of the other issues, especially that are going on in Florida, not this thing with the abortion thing, but other issues. But the other four states have this abortion thing going on, plus other things that the GOP is doing. But all they have to do, really, is the Democrats capture two, basically, of those five states.
It's over.
It's easy for them to do. It's over. And especially
yeah.
now, they can start capturing Texas. You're going to assure a win that Hillary's going to win. At this point, considering they actually some of the things that they're doing are a blessing for Hillary, it's a blessing. But let me go my other point after you know. So now, Trayvon Martin, the lawyer who said a very very clever thing. Okay, he said, you know, sort of clever, and in a sense, if you're a stupid jury or if you're a stupid individual, he went off and said that okay, well, Trayvon Martin did have a weapon. And the weapon was
I saw
the cement. The cement, okay? Now, but how stupid is this going to be so that, you know, hey, Egberto, if I'm with you and I get you somewhere near a piece of cement, now I have the right to kill you. Okay? I have the right to shoot you. And not just any, you know, like he shot him cold dead in the heart. I mean, it shows
yes.
the intent there. So, you know, here, Egberto, I could shoot you in the heart because – there was a piece of cement. There's cement all over the place. Well, why don't we just cement the whole world and I could shoot anybody?
You know,
I mean,
it's funny, John. John, yesterday I was all insulated in the Capitol. It was like when I woke up this morning, it was like a new century because, you know, I live on news. But yesterday the only news I lived was the Texas debate news, nothing else. So
right.
I came and I turned on the TV and I saw where the guy went and said the cement was a weapon. I almost flipped out. I couldn't believe
it. It did seem very clever at first. Sure, it does. At first, you start thinking about it. You might say, "Oh, that's quite. He might be quite right." You know. And then you say, "Well, then he felt threatened." You know. And then again, if you think about it, it's just a conjured up bunch of malarkey.
Yeah, but you guys are treading on some stuff right there that I need to point out, please.
Go ahead, man.
I understand the logic of what you're saying, of course, and we hope that people of intelligence reject such arguments. But the fact that it's being raised is within the purview of giving your client the best possible defense, and you must, in my view, you must support that at all times inside the courtroom. The rest of that stuff, I hate. But when an attorney is representing somebody, you know, we weren't there. And, of course, Trayvon Martin is not testifying, as was pointed out last night, unfortunately, because he's dead, which really sucks, obviously. But when it comes to the defense, you know, we don't want to, in my view, attack due process, because that's what we're doing by saying, you know, and believe me, the guy's reaching, but it's his job to do it's his job to win. And it's not just – it's not a monetary thing, even though most of them do it that way now. When you look at the law, one of the beauties is that you get to fight, you get to due process. One of the things that I've been screaming about is the fact that all of these laws that they're creating, the Patriot Act, the NDAA, is removing the process to fight while you're having the ultimate sanction against you of life, liberty, or the pursuit of happiness or property. So I just suggest to be careful treading there, because that's actually what you're saying, is that we don't want the due process. And
no. That's not what I'm saying. I'll go on two quick things. like, okay, so there's a telephone pole nearby. Well, I had the right to defend myself and shoot the guy because there was a telephone nearby, and he could have hit my head up against the telephone pole. I mean,
well, right, it's a ludicrous defense, but the attorney needs to, whatever he needs to come up with to make his defendant win is the point. I'm not saying that his argument is ludicrous. Give me a break. I mean, this guy, I'm in the concrete business. It's absurd. You know, so, I mean, that means every time I'm on the job, I have a potential weapon because I'm pouring concrete in the ground. I mean, of course it's ludicrous. But
you could kill all your, you'd have the right to kill all your employees.
Well, no, I mean, the right.
No, I'm just saying the argument,
right.
The argument that they're making,
it gives you
almost
break
ground.
In here a second.
Like, it's okay.
Hold on a second, guys.
Let me add a perspective here. Let me add a perspective really quick.
Go, Jenny.
If I were a woman, you know, so I'm a woman, I'm walking down the street, and some dude in an SUV is stalking me, right? And then this guy gets out of the car and comes at me, right? What am I going to do? Apparently, I'm going to attack him with my tampon. So I didn't like the O.J. trial. I don't like TV in the courtroom, and I don't like it because it becomes media. And there is such a thing as due process of law, right? And people
right.
do what they do. I've been on lots of juries. I'm just one of those people that always gets jury duty. And so you see that what goes on in court. I'll tell you, it's crazy making to have people who've never been in a courtroom watching this like they knew what they were watching. And so I really do resent the mediaization, if you will, of the legal process.
Absolutely.
And the other part that what it does is it gives you the opportunity then to sort of polarize the viewing audience. And, you know, so there's this, I swear that there are a few news networks out there who are doing their darndest to create violence after the verdict. You know,
I think they're all
just
doing
it when
I
it doesn't exist. And it's the same thing here. You know, so much judgment, so much judgment, so much judgment. And as long as we're living in this space where due process can't happen without judgment, where people can't exercise their civil liberty to gather and to speak, can't happen without derogatory judgment. It's not people aren't just agreeing or disagreeing. They are vile to one another. And I think as long as news networks are allowed to enhance the vilification this way, then all they're doing is succeeding in the divide and conquer strategy. They're ununiting these states and weakening America. End of rant.
You know what, Janine, you're so right. But I tell you what is even more scary to me is how effective using your words, the mediaization of different things, whether it be Trayvon, whether it be abortion, whether it be any of these things, how it actually has the ability to change people's opinions and have people do things they otherwise wouldn't have done. As an example,
again, Alberto, what you mm-hmm. have here, another example, as we've talked about, all of us, of corporate personhood allowing this to happen. Because remember, the reason that the media can lie, literally can lie, is because the removal of the fairness doctrine based upon their right of free speech as a corporation because they are considered people. So, we're right back into the money aspect, once again, the basis of what we all are fighting for, and another example of how when you go full circle, you wind up in a situation where you have corporations being considered as people, and by that basis alone, they're given the same individual liberties that you and I have, which is ridiculous, obviously.
That is well said. Were you saying something, John?
No, but I will.
Greg,
I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Greg.
I was just going to add to that, actually. Let me see if I can get a little quieter. Go to John for now. Go ahead.
You know, one thing is I was sort of upset with the judge. She didn't even at the end go that, you know, about reasonable doubt. She went on to basically what the defense lawyers were saying, that if there was any almost shred of doubt she was talking about, any shred of doubt that he should be totally acquitted. I couldn't believe that the judge wasn't stating the right things about
the instructions for the jury are argued upon by both attorneys during the process out of the jury, usually in the chambers.
I'm talking about her closing
I'm talking about her closing. Her closing is all of that.
She reads it
by the attorneys and decided, and then she'll make a ruling on. And then, of course, it becomes an appellate matter if it is alleged to have affected the trial. Of course, if they acquit Zimmerman and the prosecution wants to raise that, you have a double jeopardy around that as well. But that's where a lot of that comes from. I mean, that, like Janine was saying, what's important, I think her one of the points that she made, I think are really important, is that you have a situation here where people who haven't even been, and I'm not saying you have, John, I'm just making, mm-hmm. I'm supporting what you said, is that when you haven't been involved in the process or understand what all of that goes on in the courtroom, just in front of the jury, forget with the jury, when you have it on television, people don't understand. Like to me, having it on television is a way that you can undermine the Fourth Amendment, because so many people will get mad if they think that somebody's obviously going to be convicted of something brutal and they get away with it because of the technicality. Then if they see that in front of them, then they're going to turn around and support some kind of an erosion of the Fourth Amendment. Meanwhile, here we are with a complete erosion of the Fourth Amendment in other examples. So it is a process where they do all this judgment stuff, like she described, in an area where that people don't fully understand.
Yeah, but can I ask you on this Fourth Amendment stuff that everybody keeps talking that we've eroded completely a Fourth Amendment? Everybody thinks that whatever we have the right to total privacy. That's not true. The Fourth Amendment.
True.
No, the
it
Fourth.
Is true.
No, it's not true. The Fourth Amendment has to do with search and seizure.
What it has to do with is privacy,
let's try to keep it one at a time, my friend.
What you have to remember is that in order to be searched, there has to be probable cause and due process. The reason that there is because we have a right to privacy. If we didn't, then the process of probable cause would not be necessary to get them through the door.
Okay, but data mining, is that against the Fourth Amendment? No.
Is what?
Not at all.
Is
data mining against the Fourth Amendment? Not at all.
It is.
Let's try, John.
Right.
When you ask a question, let's try to make the other person answer so that we don't talk over each other, please, my friend.
Okay, sorry.
You have... Anytime anything is now, first of all, the majority of data mining that's going on has to do with private industry agreement. It isn't even the government that's doing it. So let's make that clarification right away. The government is going to these private entities and demanding that they get our stuff, and they've always been required to get a warrant. Even the FISA courts were the reason that they were created in the way that they were in 1978. Was because even though they made all the information secret to the public, they still had due process. The courts had to still agree that there was probable cause for this information to be given. What the Patriot Act did is that it removed the necessity of due process to get the information. It made it carte blanche. The Fourth Amendment, the language of the Fourth Amendment is very clear. And the fact that you have to have probable cause to even get the information totally means that we have privacy, and they cannot touch our life, our liberty, or our property as a result without the due process.
Can I go on?
Yeah,
okay.
Go, John.
It's not that clear, and I'll tell you why. Because the Third Amendment has to do with soldiers and stationing themselves, which was wrongful. So that has to do with more our privacy and that kind of thing in our home. Okay. So now the Fourth Amendment, there was some controversy because when we had the days of AT&T, and here was your line, and guess what? They could tap into your line if they thought you were a criminal, that kind of thing. Now if they knew it was a criminal discussions, which they had a certain amount of time to keep listening to it, okay. If it was like, say, even though it was like, say, Bulger, okay, Bulger from Boston, and now he was talking to his wife or his girlfriend, okay, and it was a very private conversation. They had the right to listen to it for a little while, and then they had to hang up the phone. You know about that, correct? So,
yeah.
John,
but,
I want to.
Okay,
can I come in to a second, guys? Hold on a second. I want to come in for one thing because since I today I really want to do a lot about Texas, but you just opened the door for me to bring Texas right back in, John. And it goes like this: the law in Texas says that abortions are illegal after 20 weeks. A young lady at her 22nd week used a clothes hanger, and this is graphic. I'm sorry, folks, but this is real now. Used a hanger and effects an abortion on herself after 22 weeks, and she throws the hanger out, and somebody in her garbage sees or in her vicinity sees it. Does the state have the right to go and take a look at that because she, well, you know, technically speaking, she's broken the law?
Let me say something, Alberto. Let me just be clear on a couple of things here, please.
Right.
The first thing is that just because that they did these processes with Bolger or anybody else does not make it, in fact, constitutional or legal because they do it, like so many other things that they do. But I'm going to read you the Third and Fourth Amendment to be clear here what we're talking about. The Third Amendment says, no soldier shall, in time of peace, be quartered in any house without the consent of the owner, now nor in time of war, but in the manner to be prescribed by law. That's the Third Amendment. The Fourth Amendment, the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrant issue but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. That's what it says, word for word. There is no question that
Here's the sticking point on it. Here's the sticking point on it. Okay, I now use Verizon Wireless, okay? Guess what? I don't own anything, okay? The equipment, the communications, nothing. That is theirs. Guess what? It's theirs.
Verizon Wireless, not the government. That's what
yes.
you need to
No,
read
no, no, no.
Here.
It's this company's Verizon Wireless's, okay? So now, like, this is sort of the sticking point on why they have other companies. In essence, I think the government's doing it so that they have other companies doing it. Because basically, other companies can sell – hold on. They can sell information off, okay? They can sell information off, and they want to profit. Sure they do. So now, if not, the government has this thing with whatever they call data mining, okay? And they collect and they collect and they collect. And not until the NSA gets to where, hey, this person we need to tap into. So basically that information is just retained. It's not listened to until they get these FISA court orders. So, yeah, they can collect it. They can collect it.
No. You don't understand what's going on.
No, no. I don't want to stay on this particular – I don't want to go – this is a back and forth that I don't think we're going to get out of. So I don't want to – keep on this one, my friends, for that reason specifically. I think that's an impasse there. Where I stand on this stuff personally, I sure don't know because I'm not really up on it. But here's where I want to go.
One quick thing.
Make it quick on this one, my friend, please.
One quick thing. When you're speaking on airwaves, guess what? It's not the same as a landline, okay? So now here's the sticking point these days. The airwaves, just like a radio, it's not your private thing anymore. And the same thing with Facebook or anything.
I just want to add one thing to that, that it's important. The thing about it is the way the law reads is given that when the Constitution was written, there weren't electromagnetic signals that anybody knew about. That sort of stuff then became something that was interpreted then or now by the Supreme Court. So none of this is black and white. But that said, I want to read something special about Texas because today is one time that I really wanted to stay with Texas. So I hope you guys bear me out here. And this particular one is titled, and unless another call comes in from a new person, I'm going to read this particular blog. Republicans spur progressive move. And by the way, guys, the number is 646-929-2495. Come on, Texans, where are you? This happened in our state. We have John from Jersey telling everything about you and Bobby from, I think, Georgia. Where are my Texans? Anyhow, let's get busy with this blog. Many cringe whenever they hear that Texas is a red state. Demographically, it seems impossible. And by the way, I forgot to tell you guys, this is this particular post will be on the front page of Daily Coast tomorrow, so take a look at it, and please make some comments on it tomorrow after you take a look at it. Many cringe whenever they hear that Texas is a red state. Demographically, it seems impossible. Texas is a majority-minority state. Specifically, non-Latino whites make up 44% of the state. Latinos make up 38% of the state. Blacks, 12%, and Asians, 4%. Blacks, Latinos, and Asians vote overwhelmingly Democratic. Latinos, 70% plus. Blacks, 90% plus. Asians, 70% plus in the last election. To be clear, this devotion to the Democratic Party is dictated entirely by policy. Republican hostility towards policies beneficial to minorities and outright prejudice makes that party unacceptable to most minorities. Given the above-mentioned demographic percentages, if all groups voted with similar intensity, it is mathematically impossible for Texas to be a red state or purple state. Many attribute Texas redness to gerrymandering districts. That is partially true when one notes that the Texas congressional delegation is two-thirds Republican. It does not explain that all state office holders are Republicans and all U.S. senators are Republicans. Republican control of Texas is affected by the fact that Texas is ranked 51st in voting. Many attempt to attribute this voter suppression. Texas puts up many subtle obstacles that, while not voter suppression, effectively suppresses the vote. Anyone wanting to register voters must become deputized by taking a class in any county they want to register voters. In metropolitan areas like Houston, it means a person wanting to cover that area may need to take 5 classes. Texas also purges voter rolls frequently. This, again, does not stop. This does not stop one from voting, but slows down the process by requiring provisional ballots that many won't be patient enough to fill out manually. With the Supreme Court gutting the Voting Rights Act, the Texas Attorney General is reinstituting the voter ID law, which will force only a select few pieces of IDs to be valid to use for voter identification. Ironically, a gun permit will be allowed as a valid ID, while a school ID will not. Texans have not been mad enough to rebel against Republican politicians. For a long time, they have just been apathetic. Things were bad, but not bad enough to elicit massive action. They were not bad enough to generate an organic grassroots movement emanating from middle class and the poor. Republicans, with their power, could never get enough. They started making many freeways, toll roads owned by foreign entities. In effect, a tax on every Texan and a wealth transfer mechanism. They cut school budgets in a draconian fashion, even as they gave businesses over $19 billion in yearly tax breaks and credits. This started to elicit grassroots action. Not to the extent to instill fear, but enough to draw some attention. They passed the vaginal ultrasound bill that violated any woman who wanted a pregnancy termination for whatever reason. Texans reacted, but at least women still maintain some modicum of control over their bodies. This session, however, was the straw that tipped the scales. SB5 or SB1, depending on the conference, which effectively shuts down abortions in most of the state, along with other medical infringements on women's rights and bodies, would not go unnoticed. Women and men from all corners of Texas revolted. It caught Republicans by surprise. While it will not change the outcome of their votes to pass the draconian laws, many privately are articulating what they have seen. Participation and engagement from Texans from all corners of the state they've never seen before. Many have admitted that they feel the turning point is at hand and that fast-tracking much of their policies is an attempt to get what they can while in power. Their assumption is rolling back changes in some instances will be late or difficult. Republicans have done a humongous favor to the progressive movement in Texas. There has always been progressives in Texas, from President Lyndon Johnson to Governor Ann Richards. Rick Perry and his Republican cohorts overreaching will be seen going forward as the rebirth of the progressive movement in Texas. And the first person I'm going to ask to comment on that is Greg, if your mic's open.
Sorry, Egberto, I was muted. You echoed precisely what I was thinking earlier and talking about, and that is that the Republicans have overreached. It's the death throes of a dying party. They're making as big a power grab as they can while they can. I think they have to know that the end is near for them in terms of having any sort of a significant percentage of the next generation of citizens. They'll retain what they have today in terms of a dying demographic, but this is the beginning of the end for them, and they're only hastening that by being such radicals in places like Texas and North Carolina.
Janine, what do you think about it? Thank you, Greg.
Well, Egberto, you speak truth and wisdom here. I think that you're right that by the purpose of these public demonstrations is to bring into the light what's happening, right? And yes, there are issues. Someone on my show last Thursday said, you know, if all the women in Texas voted, even though the women are diverse and would not all vote the same, it would just totally shift. If all the, I think the failure of those of us that were activists, if you will, in the 60s and 70s, is that somehow we thought things were okay. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
And we dropped our guard. And one of the things I said in my little impromptu talk at the Enough is Enough rally on the lawn of the Capitol building,
That was a wonderful speech that you gave. That was a wonderful speech. I remember well.
And it was totally impromptu, but it's really, I realized when I stood there in front of the camera, I realized my own shame at having dropped the ball and allowing all this mischief to occur in the background and sort of, not that I didn't have any awareness, but it just bloomed so big when it had the opportunity. I mean, I think these are like opportunistic weeds, this pathological profit motive. I was a business person. I believe in profit. I believe in commerce. But I don't believe in this, the hijacking of our country, the subversion of our due process, and the denigration of the many rich cultures that make up this country, right, that keep
Absolutely.
Us all sort of pointing sticks at each other. And, I mean, even earlier someone said, you know, do you think Caucasian men with money are getting a bad rap here? And I'll tell you, I cannot control who will take what personally. You know what I'm saying? Because people
right.
have their own reasons for taking something personally. But here's what I can see. I can see that the media, the narrative, is giving people opportunity to take it personally. Right?
Right.
And so it's like all of that is being cultivated. And so the only opportunity that we have as Americans, and it's very constitutional, is to make public statements, to gather, to say, to protest. I mean, it is something we can do. We vote with our money, we vote with our investments, we do all kinds of things, but this is what's going to break through. And thank you, Texas, as what's your name? Sarah Sleeman. You know,
yes.
When she was hauled out of the chambers, that's what she was saying. Thank you for being who you are in front of the camera. Thank you for being who you are, where the world can see you. And so, to me, yes. Is it a revolution? No. I think it's evolution. But take it
I agree 100%. If you had watched, you know, with all the armed guards that you had in there, and later on I'm going to post another picture that Andrea sent to me, and this is a picture where you see like 50 new officers running up the stairs for all to take care of all these bad folks that come to protest the bill. And, you know, there was the reality is that there were so many people in there. If they had turned bad, if they had turned negative, there's nothing the cops could have done in the short term. Yes, in the long term, yes. But it would have been so overpowering that, you know, side weapons would not have been enough. I had never, ever seen the Capitol that way. Representative Farrar told Andrea the same thing. This Capitol has never seen this action before. So it was really people action. And when I write the title that, thank you very much to the GOP for the rebirth of the progressive movement in Texas, that's exactly what I mean. I spoke to some of the young leaders yesterday, and it's I had an interesting discussion on the way back before everybody got too sleepy in the car, and one of the ladies in the car specifically seemed a bit concerned that arrests were going to start taking place because some of the people who are in Rise Up Texas, which is sort of an offshoot from Occupy, they wanted to effect some sort of civil disobedience, and which they did, and they got quite a few of them got arrested. But she wanted to kind of get out of the area because, you know, she said she didn't want... And I understood exactly where she was coming from. She didn't want to be engaged in that direction. But at the same time, I'm going to shut some mics down because of some background noise that I don't know where it's coming from, and then I'll open them back up. But at the same token, when we were talking about these young folk, I told them that we must remember, a lot of us in the boomer generation, we have actually failed this current generation, and I mean we failed them badly. How badly have we failed them? Not only with the cost of education, you know, we were talking about student loans, and you know, all of this wraps into one big package. That's why in the prelude to the show that I had today, I said there was a war in education, there's a war in healthcare, there's a war on women, and there is a war on labor. These four things, you think about the core of these four things, and you're left with nothing, which is exactly, you're left with the core of what's ailing not only Texas, but the entire country. So after we went through quite a bit, I explained to them that, because we all knew this, that in effect, we failed the next generation, and it's up to us. It is up to us to atone for that failure, because it's not, you know, some people were saying, well, you know, why can't we as progressives, the folks from Rise Up, just stick with the guys here and go downtown and march with them and not try to stay at the Capitol and create any commotion? Yeah, we can ask them to do that. But we can't demand that they do that. We can't tell them that they need to do it our way, because it's not like we didn't fail them. It's not like our way worked out all that well for them. These guys are racking up $100,000 in bills. We voted in a bunch of clowns in Austin that's taken away these young women's rights to their bodies. How have we, as the grown adults, been fair to them? We can go ahead and say, oh, it's the Republicans that are doing that. Why the hell didn't we vote the appropriate people into office? So I have a special sympathy for sometimes not only the rejection that we get from some of the Occupy types or the Rise Up types. I accept that because until we go ahead and prove ourselves that we are worthy again of them listening to us, why should they? Any comments? And all the mics are open.
There's so much I could say.
Go ahead, say it. Let me hear it.
I mean, I it's just like you said. It's just it's a multitude of wars, basically trying to take this country backward by at least 80 years and everything. It's basically a corporatist kind of like a plutocratic society based on false theocracy that's not related
right.
to the Bible whatsoever, while promoting hopelessness and dystopia, and that people will get so conditioned to having less and less that they won't care that we're living in this form of unconstitutional kingdom. It's basically psychological. They're trying to dishearten on every single area, take away our rights on to speak. The Fifth Amendment, basically, the Supreme Court said, unless you say I expressly invoke my privilege against self-incrimination, word for word, the Fifth Amendment doesn't mean anything. That came out on June 23rd of this year.
Right.
And that's basically, we have people claiming they are the guardians of the Constitution, doing everything in their power to disintegrate the Constitution.
Absolutely.
Alito said that the Constitution is dead. This is a Supreme Court justice saying the Supreme Court that the Constitution is dead.
Well, you know, I mean, what I really think is that they want to reinterpret the Constitution a la Powell. You remember the Powell letter, anybody? Anybody here know what the Powell letter is?
Yes, we've talked about it before.
Right. They feel a country slipping away from who rightfully owns it. That's a lot of the, you know, you talk to a lot of people, right? And whenever you say things like the Browning of America, or you say something like the womaning of America, or that Hillary is going to be in control, or let's even select a Republican lady in control.
Egberto,
Rand
Paul just said it the other day. He said, you know, when America finally becomes more like mixed than white, he said it won't be America. Rand Paul said this.
I think that was – no, it wasn't Rand Paul. I think that was one of his – one of the people – the
no,
person
no, no,
that
no.
Wrote.
He had that other controversy. But, no, it was Rand Paul who said that.
He said that as well?
He said
can
it
you,
himself. No, the other controversy that he had was a gentleman who said that, you know, who celebrates John Wilkes Booth's birthday – That Abraham Lincoln was rightfully shot.
The Avenger. Okay, the Avenger guy.
Yeah, I was thinking about the Avenger story. I didn't know about the other quote there, John.
Yeah, no,
sorry
that was
if
this
I
week
got that
too.
Wrong.
That was this week, too.
Okay.
You didn't know that. You know what's really amazing also is that the one word I always pick up on, I mean, language is very important, the word uppity. They use
right.
the word uppity a lot. You should, more or less, they don't know their place,
right.
and they're getting too uppity. They want rights. They want to be a part of the fabric of the United. No. This is only for a white Anglo-Saxon Protestant worldview. You do not count.
Do you remember what the Chief Justice Scalia said? When he was talking about voters, he said nobody had he defined voting as a what do you call it that word that that we use for entitlement.
Racial entitlement.
He called the voting rights a racial entitlement. I almost fell out of my seat.
Hey, Roberto.
Yes, sir.
I want to go back again to this story about this woman. She only fired a warning shot. She's a black woman in Florida. A black woman in Florida, 14 months ago, fired a warning shot at her husband. Got getting 20 years to jail because she didn't go for the three-year plea because she knew she was not guilty. You know, she was standing her ground, okay? But a guy, if not Hispanic white male, kills a black young boy into the heart and shoots him straight dead in the heart, and he might go free.
Yeah, I mean, how do I answer that? I have always known America to have two justice systems, and whenever I make that point, and I know we're a little bit off subject, but I think it's worth, this is worth some talking here.
Well, I mean, this decision.
No. I'm with you, John. Because it's interesting that you brought this up here, because last week, again, I wrote a piece called I was Trevon the day I came to America or something like that, and then I posted out also on iReports, and interestingly enough, it now has over, I don't know, 12,000-13,000 views on iReport. And what is interesting is looking at the few comments that are on it. And I would suggest you take a look at that. It's amazing to me. It's really amazing to me some of the comments that I heard. And this goes to something that Janine was talking about with these cases. Janine talked about the mediaization of these trials. What was concerning to me is how many people said to me in those comments, this guy was just a thug in the making.
Right.
It wasn't person.
You know why he got to this crazy point, why he did and took the tactics that he did. There was a young kid, not him, okay, and who did get off scot-free and accordingly and supposedly was a criminal in that area who was robbing people, and therefore he joined this you know, block thing to go after people who were doing such. Okay, now Trayvon Martin. Okay, not he went to the 7-Eleven or whatever it was. He wasn't a criminal. He bought his Skittles. He bought his drink. You know, he didn't commit a crime. He came through the area, which anybody like you or I or anybody should be able to do, okay? But then because of this other incident, and maybe it was some fault of the police prior, in the sense that they didn't get this underage child, you know, prosecuted, who was in essence probably guilty of something. But then, of course, then because he was let go, this Zimmerman thought that he had to take matters into his own hands. Plus, he wanted to be a law enforcement, but I don't understand him wanting to be in law enforcement. He was guilty of crimes himself. Most people who are guilty of crimes can't become law enforcement. I mean, where does he get it in his head that he could have been law enforcement?
Well, I let me. You know what? I would love for you to read that thing that I wrote. Because, and the reason why, and you know what? I want to find it on iReports and. It's also actually, I'll find it on Daily Coast. It was a front page thing on Daily Coast. And the reason I'm going to do that is, look, there are many of us here, okay, off Texas subject a little bit, but there are many of us here that accept that we have a justice system that is dual, you know, that, and not only do we don't have a choice but to accept that. And once you have a jury system, the prevailing thoughts within the jury pool, it's hard to get around that. On me being a black person, my way of dealing with a whole lot of that is simply to avoid the justice system altogether. Mm-hmm. I have never considered, and I'm just getting personal here now, folks. I have never considered the justice system my friend, and as such, I avoid it at all costs.
Sure.
Now, that means whenever I'm stopped by the police officer, it is, yes, sir, what do you want me to do, sir? I am never confrontational with an officer. Just right here in Austin, while I was on stage taping the officers, the first time one made contact with me forcefully enough that that could have escalated, I de-escalated, and I disappeared. And the reason why is being right and framed is no use to me. I rather
No. I think that goes for white, black, Hispanic, or female, regardless or whoever. I think in regards to the police, if you really push their buttons, they'll screw you no matter who you are.
No, I agree. You know, I don't want to take that away from you. I agree with you there. I'm just saying that in many of the officers' minds, it's a lot easier to do X to me than it is to you. But I don't want to go on to that. By the way, by me stating that, it's not by no way am I trying to make myself a victim, because the hell I'm not.
Right.
I make the choices of how I will deal with law enforcement, period. That's it. And that's the end of that subject. Back to Texas. I made that statement on Texas with regards to, and I hadn't heard from all of you, including yourself. Greg made a comment on the blog that I wrote with regards to what we were thinking about the Republican actually being the best thing for the program, the current Republican overreach being a great thing for the progressive movement, and with that, the women in Texas will recover all the rights that they've lost. Any more comments on that? John, that's to you. You hadn't answered that.
Well, I don't have too much on that. You know, I've got some other comments on other things, which maybe we could talk about in another show. But
I want to keep this. This is one show that I wanted to keep as Texas as possible, even though you were very successful.
I'm from Jersey, though.
No, but you guys are always successful because it's your show. You always take it away from me. Come on, but it's okay. Bobby, why don't you take this one away from me?
All I know is that I think one of the things that we're doing here with some of the comments that are being made is that we're giving the Democrats too much of a pass and too much credit for that they are duplicit in what's going on in Texas and in our country just as much as
so make the point.
Maybe
I
not
really
as
want
much.
To hear your point because you are correct. I want you to make the point a little bit clearer so that people understand exactly what you're saying, because something I haven't said.
First of all, the Democratic Party is way too passive, and it's almost to the point of I believe that Democrats and the Republicans have us locked out. As you know, I'm actually working in an organization that wants to break up the duopoly of the
right.
Republican and the Democratic Party and allow everybody else to get in. And I actually would like to see the parties, as you've heard me say before, the party names removed from our election process, and people can just look at the names and try and have people, for value. As opposed to just saying, well, I'm going to vote all this party, I'm going to vote all that party. But
right.
as far as our erosion of rights or the attacks on women or the attacks on anybody, on any individual aspect, regardless of what it is, the Democrats are just as duplicit as the Republicans are, whether it is for being passive,
or for being part of the problem.
I'm sorry?
Or for being part of the problem. I mean,
right.
I think you're absolutely correct.
For all the obstructionism that is claimed, for example, in our Congress, well, I don't see the Democrats railing against it at a level that they should be. I see the Democrats spending just as much time at fundraising and trying to be reelected as I see the Republicans. You know, when you see somebody like Wendy Davis come out, and stand out there, where's the rest of them? And I mean really where the rest of them. I'm not saying, okay, they're going to talk. Why aren't they all out there in the front line? One of the things that happened last year that I thought that was wonderful was when the Democrats decided to hijack the legislative process in Wisconsin and head for the hills and not even show up. I mean, that if you're going to work for your constituents and you're going to have principle, then do it like you're supposed to. I mean, if you're going to have people, for example, like what's going on in North Carolina,
why are the Democrats in North Carolina, if they are completely against what's going on, why aren't they out there in the assembly getting arrested with the people protesting? Why aren't they doing that? Because that's the level that if they're going to claim that it's always the Republicans, then get out there and fight the way you're supposed to. No, they figure, well, we're going to lose, so we'll just worry about getting reelected and we'll use these arguments and stuff. I'm sorry, they're not doing enough.
Bobby, you know what? That goes right back to money and politics, and because these guys only raise a certain amount of stink. Let's take your statements a bit further, okay? How many times should Harry Reid not understand that the current intransigence in the Senate cannot be broken unless we simply have majority rule? In other words, there's nothing constitutional about a supermajority. Nothing constitutional about
it. Where did that 60 number come from?
That was agreement within the Senate. That's an agreement.
Right.
There's nothing constitutional about that. And it's not like he didn't know that we had a crippled policy, that we were crippled by policy with that base on the current constituents, the constituents of the Congress. There's absolutely no way that he doesn't know that. But the reality is there is a certain amount of camaraderie. By the way, everybody that's listening to this show need to understand something, okay? When you see these guys in front of the cameras, when you see them on the floor of Congress giving their big speeches, even though there are times that I blog it and other people blog it, do remember that those are shows. Those are orchestrations. There's nothing there. Everything happens behind closed doors, not on TV. Yes, sir.
I see something here about the Texas thing. It says, guns don't kill people, tampons kill people.
And, Jenny
like
has a great post on that. Jenny, I got your post, by the way.
You have my what?
I got your post with the machine guns made, with the machine gun bullets made of tampons.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
It's the tampon bandito.
That would be the way that you can get into the assembly. You make a machine gun. And I couldn't believe I saw that this morning. But then again, I could. Don't you think, for example, last year's election cycle, again, the debates, just looking at the debates, you have a corporation that runs the debate process. It isn't even the legal, remember, it used to be the League of Women, or now, I think it was, National
right.
Organization of Women, used to do them. Now you have a corporation that owns the process. And the only time in our lifetime that we have had others in the debate is when Ross Perot paid his way into it. Now, and last year you had to have an organization go out and create a debate process that was parallel to the other debate in order to have the other parties that were legally on the ballot to be in the process. And that is absurd. So essentially, when you talk about duplicity and all of these issues that we have, and then all of the sidebar issues that distractions and the way the media is operating, so we have lost the constitutionality of the election process. It is not just about gerrymandering, and it is not just about voter ID laws and restrictive laws of other sides. I mean, Florida's restrictive voting laws were not based upon ID last year. If you remember, it was based upon them creating roadblocks to organizations like Rock the Vote to getting people out to register. It was absurd what was going on. So you have all these attacks on the election process, plus they are not allowing anybody else to play. So they're telling you and I and John and Janine and Greg, these are the only two choices that you're allowed to consider. That is absurd.
Mm-hmm. That is correct. Now, I have a new person on the line that I want to bring in. You're absolutely correct, Bobby. You're absolutely correct. It's like I said, it's a game. But you know what gives me hope, and I'm coming to you now, 210. What gives me a whole lot of hope is what we did in Texas. We didn't win, but we brought the people out. And if those particular people vote and the machines are not rigged, then we'll have a change, because those people came out there organically. The way text messaging, tweets, Facebook, and social media was used in this last night, Tuesday night, and all the other night, or Monday night, and all the other nights that we were out there? Simply amazing. Let me get 210-210. Who do I have the honor of speaking with? A Texas call.
Yeah, this is John. Yeah, this is John from San Antonio. How you doing?
John, thank you for calling from Texas, my friend. I was wondering where were my Texans.
Yeah, yeah. First of all, I want to congratulate you on being promoted to a front pager on Daily Kos, because I really enjoy your writing, and I think it's great that you have a bigger platform. And so I really, really want to congratulate you on that. I always look forward to your post.
Thank you, sir.
And I also really enjoyed your coverage, because you did give an insight that a lot of people didn't have, the fact that you were there. And so that was very enjoyable. One thing I do want to talk about, though, is that this is a little bit dealing with sociology and in 2013, and how things have changed, within just the past few months. I'm talking about the polling that has been done in various states, more libertarians are getting more play. Rand Paul right now, he leads all Republicans. He leads in Iowa. He leads in Montana. He leads in Michigan. He leads in Ohio. And Ted Cruz, believe it or not, leads by double digits in Texas in the latest poll. And this is what's happening. This is the reality. And it's very sad, that this is happening, and it's great that you're fighting back, and I agree with you. I mean, hopefully it will be a turning point, but we also have to be, look at what's actually happening. If you look at the PPP polling from January and look at the latest polling that was done in July, Republicans in every single category have improved. I'm talking about, the fact that, even though Perry says he's not running, they didn't know that before they took the polling. His polling was better. Cornyn's polling was better. Everything, even the Hillary Clinton versus other opponents, Republicans gained. This is what's happening. People are not satisfied with Democrats, and they're losing the messaging war, just like they lost the messaging war in 2010. And it's a very sad thing. I mean, I was noticing in the Ohio poll that, Biden was actually down by 18 points against Chris Christie. 18 points. I mean, that is a slaughter.
Yeah, but that's Biden. That's not Hillary.
I got to chime in on Rand Paul, just to be clear here, because Rand Paul is one of my pet peeves about what's going on in our society. Rand Paul talks libertarian, but he is not a principled libertarian. He's a member of the Republican Party. Rand Paul is giving a keynote address this weekend at Freedom Fest in Las Vegas, and Grover Norquist is part of Freedom Fest, and Grover Norquist is not a libertarian. And there is not another person that's in this event over the weekend that is a libertarian. And even Ron Paul, even Ron Paul's wife, his mother, doesn't believe Rand Paul's a libertarian, actually. And that's a long story about how I know that.
But Bobby, you're correct. But I want to get back on Don's side for a specific reason, because he hit a very, very important point. And notice what one of the things that he said was messaging.
Yeah,
and
right.
It doesn't matter that Rand Paul or Cruz or any of these guys are not really libertarian. They have what he is saying is they have successfully marketed themselves as such. And guess what? In what I discussed with the ladies on the way back from Austin was something that is interesting. That core group that that supported, that came in support of Wendy and against this policy in Texas. These were a strong showing from the Occupy type movement. And as Don said, they have a strong libertarian feel, a strong libertarian grab. So there is a good percentage of the youth that a Cruz or a Rand Paul or whatever, if these guys market themselves as libertarian with President Obama and the NSA issues and the Snowden issues and a lot of these other things coalescing, we better take heed to what Don just said. And with that, I want to bring Don in to finish the point.
Yes, John, but yeah, it's.
I mean, John, I'm
yeah,
sorry, John.
I completely agree with you, and I think that Obama is part of the problem. You know, he campaigned as a progressive. You know, both times I voted for him. Both times I was a delegate in 2008, and he is not governing as a progressive. And I mean, I understand that the House doesn't allow him to govern, but. He has to come across, you know, he has to be more powerful in getting his message across because, you know, people just don't have any confidence in him.
Can I say something about this, Egberto? Because
you let into it.
And let me go back to this thing, you know, Roberto, I just want to go back to it. You're a good guy. I love you. You know, let's go back into this thing about search and seizure, okay?
Hold on, very quickly.
The words were unreasonable search and seizure, okay? So now this,
John, there's a very important point.
Let me go to Ron Paul then. Let me go to Ron Paul and Snowden, okay? And Rand Paul and Ron Paul and Snowden, okay? This guy Snowden, I'm a constitutionalist like Rand Paul and Ron Paul and all this nonsense garbage, okay? He don't know nothing about nothing. I mean, he really doesn't. He's just, you know, he just hates Obama like a lot of people here. And therefore, you know, this is what he's going off on. This is all nonsense. He ain't a constitutionalist understanding
John,
more than anybody here.
John, you are right. First of all, let me tell you something, John. Okay, everything
they want to raise
said,
money.
Right.
They want to raise
John,
money and
wait,
collect money
John,
for themselves.
Sir, everything that you've said, I understand why you're saying it and what it's about. But I think what John is this is the other John. What John from San Antonio is saying. Is an important thing. You know, the only way we can learn is by not repeating mistakes, or not only that, but looking at trends. And what he stated is something that we better look at, because when he looks at the PPP poll, if you have as intransigent a Republican Party that we have today, that is actually coming up, and if we have libertarians that are in a lot of ways. Or the ones that allow that growth in that new growth in popularity, and you have a President Obama that let me give a good example, okay? And this is a classic example: student loans. Student loans is first of all, students is the base of a progressive party. We have the student loan issue where there are two camps. There are camps who want to make rates move with the market, and there are camps who want to freeze the rates at sub-market values or at some fixed value. I cannot see why we don't have a president that comes out and says student loan rates will be based solely at the cost of servicing the loans, and the cost of servicing the loans, of course, include the cost of managing defaults, which would put it way under 3%, which would make it completely away from market values, which is nothing more than thievery of bankers. Right now, the federal government is making up a whole lot of its deficit on the backs of student loans. A real progressive would not allow that. And I want John to comment on that, because I think you were alluding to young people and the libertarian movement, and all of that plays into the national.
John
from San Antonio. Come on in, John.
You're absolutely right about that. Every Democrat voted to keep the rates at 3.4% for another year in the Senate, except for three Democrats, actually two, Manchin and Carper, and Angus King, who's an independent, also voted against that. So they had 51 votes for, which is a majority, which would,
right.
That should mean it should pass. But, of course, it was filibuster just like everything else. But the fact is, even if it would have passed, I mean, the House wouldn't have allowed it. And that's an excellent point about Obama. He put out this thing that, I mean, the rates could actually go over 10%. It is absolutely atrocious. He's going against everybody in this party. He's going against Heidi Heitkamp and Mary Landrieu and all these conservative Democrats. He's more conservative than they are.
And it's amazing to me that he's doing that. That, folks, and for all the listeners here, that is a fact. And unless we call the facts as they are, and unless the progressive force these guys to do as they should. Because here's the thing, John, and I'm John from San Antonio. A lot of this is done for numerical shenanigans. They are making a ton of money on student loans. Student loans should be an investment. Yes, we can say let the students pay an interest, a small interest, but that's an investment in our future. And for the president to fall on the crap of the market rates, even if it means a fixed cap for whatever it is that you sign for at the time of the loan, is uncalled for. And we must call him out on that as well. We must call, if we are really progressive, irrespective of who is president, we have to call it out. Because I tell you, I've got a daughter in college. Eventually, she may need student loans. But it's not only personal. It's, again, what I said was the discussion in that car. What have we done for those young people? All of us want their vote. We want them to come and march with us. We want them to we want to give them all the support. What have we done to earn that support? And you know what? They can be fooled as well. And yeah, they could go libertarian. But you know, they can go libertarian and be screwed just as much as currently being screwed by us. And John from San Antonio, because we're running low on time, I'll let you have the last word with a quick click, 15 seconds from everybody else. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, no, I agree with what you're saying, and I agree with the Occupy movement. That was actually one of the biggest problems. When I went to the Occupy San Antonio, I would constantly be talking about economics, and obviously I'm very far to the left, and I want to see as many poor people helped as possible. Because I believe that's the way the world should be, and they feel, and it's amazing to me that they have this outlook where everyone is for themselves, and it's very sad that this movement is growing more popular, and it really, I just hope it stops as it becomes, as it becomes more popular. I hope it's shut down.
Well, I mean,
regular Republicans were bad enough as it is, but
no. Well, healthcare is going to the demise of a healthcare system, the demise of all these things that people get right now will take care of that just fine. I mean, in the long run, I mean, there will be short term pain, but the youth is only driven by at this point by what they see as success and functional. But I have to run here, Bobby. Give me just 15 seconds, please, because I only have 3 minutes.
Please join me Monday night. I'll be guest hosting on Press One for Democracy. I'm going to have Christina Tobin on from Free and Equal Election Foundation and Ben Swan.
Thank you very much, Bobby. Greg, 15 seconds, please, my friend.
It was a great show. I would have loved to have heard a little bit more about the polls that John from San Antonio was talking about, the sources.
Let's
of
do
those
that next
polls
week.
Who conducted them. Yep, thanks.
Great. John Jersey, you got 15 seconds, and I'm tight here.
Yep, I'm going to make it quick. Many of the libertarian movement are anarchists. But additionally, just want to quickly say, I don't agree with everything Republicans or Democrats say, but at least one thing they know about, a Constitution and the libertarians, their movement.
Got to cut you, brother. I love you,
quickly,
brother. Got to cut
no,
you.
Quickly, is totally polar opposite from Constitution.
Give me 15 seconds, Janine. Thank you, John.
Hey, if you like this whole Be the Media idea, go to www.coffeepartyusa.com and either donate or join. We need to be the independent media. Thanks. I'm done.
Thank you very much, folks. Remember, Mondays at 10 p.m., it is Democracy with Dan Aronson, but Bobby Rodrigo taking over this week on Monday. Tuesday at 8 o'clock, The Middle Ground with Michael Charney and Eric Beiler. Thursdays, Lunch with Lauzen, that lady you just heard. And, of course, Saturdays at 1 p.m., it is Politics Done Right with Egberto Willis. On Thursday, it's at 3 p.m. Eastern for Lunch with Lauzen. I forgot to say that. Please go to www.coffeepartyusa.com. We need you guys. Become a part of the media. Love you guys. Have a great Saturday. Thank you for giving me your time. This is Politics Done Right. I'm Egberto Willis, and I'm out.